Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
Well, the Flames end the month of February strong, finishing up their long homestand for the month. And as always, I'm Dan alongside Matt. And Matt, let's jump into this week and talk about the end of, I guess, the month that wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah, well, you know, the Flames were only scheduled to play, I think it was like four or five games this month.
They were supposed to play the first two, the Calgary-Dallas, and then I think it was the, what was it, Winnipeg-Vancouver-Minnesota.
Yeah, so we got a free winning streak. Yay.
There you go. Let's start with the game that started on the 21st. This was the Calgary Flames on Monday night hosting the Winnipeg Jets in the Sal Dome, and we saw here a 3-1 win, not maybe as large as some of the win streaks we've seen in the past, but like the Seattle game, they still found a way to win. Lindholm's late goal helped the Flames defeat the Jets for their 10th in a row. And also, speaking of Lindholm, his scoring streak continued. He has 8 goals in 8 games coming out of this one. What were your thoughts on this game?
I thought it was a solid effort, very much like the Seattle game where, like, they didn't really give up a ton to Winnipeg, and they controlled the play most of the time. The bounces weren't going their way.
They had a lot of traffic in front of the net, but couldn't get a lot of those pucks in.
Yeah, and it's like you're doing most of the things right, and if you had better puck luck, you'd probably win this game 5-6-7-8-1.
I do agree with that, but I also feel like the Flames didn't have as much urgency in their game as we saw earlier.
And I agree with that entirely. It's like, yeah, we can just go out there and kick anybody's ass, and, you know, we don't have to try that hard, and because we're just running roughshod over everybody. And while that's the case, you still have to do all the little details as well.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's about, and sometimes it's about those little details, but, you know, the Flames, I thought of the, maybe of all the games in this streak, I thought this was probably the least polished game they've had.
Yeah, it was after this one that I'm like, I think that I have a strong suspicion that the streak's coming
to
an
end.
Yeah, because we saw that in the LA and Anaheim game at the beginning of December, where, like, they won both those games, and great, awesome, but, like, they looked terrible during those games. And it's like, yeah, we're going to go on a losing streak, and sure enough, they lost, like, 4 in a row before COVID hit. And, you know, it's one of those things that this team needed to, you know, tighten up a bit, especially after the Vancouver game.
The first Lindholm goal in this game got called back, so it's good that he got another one here. And a lineup note in this one, Lucic and Dubé swapped spots in the lineup. So we saw, at least starting the game, we saw Lucic on the third line and Dubé on the fourth line. That'll become a bit of a storyline later. And also, Toffoli replaced Monahan on the first power play unit midway through the game. So a few lineup tweaks for the Flames here.
And honestly, I do not expect Dylan Dubé to get a ton of playing time down the stretch, just because of the fact that Darryl likes his veterans, and Dubé has been rather inconsistent for, you know, he's been okay. There's nothing intrinsically wrong, and he's a decent third, fourth line guy. It's just that he's not overly big, he's not overly physical, and for a third, fourth line guy, it's better to go with the veteran guy who can play that physical way and do the things that you need.
Well, let's come back to Dubé in a bit. Let's wrap up this week. Anything else about the Winnipeg game? I think to me we've kind of summed it up right there.
Yeah, it was what it was. You know, they won, but it was not as convincing.
The Flames after that had 2 days off, and on the 24th they took a short road trip over to Winnipeg, their first road trip since the 2nd of February, and not a great showing here. When you said you thought the win streak was going to come to an end, it did in a very...
And, you know, honestly, if you're going to have a win streak like this end, this is like the single best way, because there's no ambiguity whatsoever. Everybody played like garbage. You throw that one in the trash. And yeah.
So this was a 7-1 Canucks win. They were powered by their 90s, ghost of the 90s, wearing their old black and white and or black and yellow and red jerseys.
Yeah. By the way, those are my favorite Canucks jerseys, and you know, they're the only ones that are not completely hideous.
Not the gradient ones, Matt?
Well, those are odd more so than bad. They're just weird. But yeah.
You know, I have to admit that I liked sort of the retro throwback from both teams. Vancouver wearing their old jerseys and Calgary obviously wearing their 80s jerseys now full time. I thought it was a good throwback.
Yeah. Definitely reminded me of like 93, 94.
Interesting in this one, in the first period, we heard, and loud enough to be picked up by the TV cameras and the radio as well, the Go Flames Go chants that were pretty loud. Not something I ever expected we'd hear in Vancouver.
Yeah, every once in a while you can hear little bits of a Go Canucks Go or Go Oilers Go chant, and then it quickly gets like muted out and deafened out by the other, but yeah, that was quite audible.
And on an interesting note, the Calgary Flames win streak started at the end of January, January 29th, against Vancouver, and it again came to an end in Vancouver here.
Honestly, this game, as bad as the score was, for like the first half of the game, honestly, I thought Calgary was the better team and probably should have been up by 2 or 3 goals by, you know, like about the halfway point of the game. It's just... Yeah, once the wheels started falling off the wagon, boy, did it just, you know, it blow up on the side of the road.
I could agree with you about the first period. I think the teams looked pretty even in the first. As soon as, even by that fourth goal, that Horvat goal, 3 power play goals in one period, that's when I knew the Flames were in trouble.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Basically, once it became 2-0, it's like, okay, well, we'll see. Then, like, right after 3-0, okay, yeah, we're going to see some, yeah, and then,
I've said for a long time that the Flames get into trouble when they take more penalties than the other team. Penalty minutes in this game, 34 Calgary, 2 Vancouver.
I think you might have identified the problem there. I'm not too sure. It's a little ambiguous.
They don't pay me $1 million to coach this team, but even I know what's wrong.
Yeah, it's like, guys, you know, if you're going to take the penalty, take a penalty, you know. At least send a message just because.
First time the Flames have given up 3 penalty kill goals this year, and also saved themselves from another first, which would have been the first time to be shut out. They haven't been shut out yet.
Yep, thank you to Mangiapane for, you know, keeping that streak alive.
Woo. So he had to... Yeah, Mangiapane...
Comeback is underway. You know, 7-1 with, like, 2 minutes left.
Actually, it was funny because as soon as it happened with 2 minutes left, I saw a few people on Twitter saying, all right, so these guys need a goal every, like, 8.5 seconds to get back into this one. We can do it.
Yep.
It's like, all right, honestly, there we go.
Honestly, you know, Vancouver could have just pulled their goalie for the rest of the game. I still don't think the Flames would have tied it.
That sounds like the end of an Air Bud movie or something.
That would be the ultimate taunt. You know, we're so far up on you, we're just pulling your goalie. Have fun.
we'll give you the empty net to shoot on for 2 minutes.
Yep.
And after this game, Daryl Sutter, I think, comment that sum things up really well, is he said he wants more gritty and less pretty going forward.
Well, and that... loops back to what I was saying about Dylan Dubé, who is a solid player, but like he does everything okay. It's just that for the role that he's being asked to play on the fourth line, like the Flames do have better options, and so that's why I think that, you know, it might be a while before you see Dubé on the ice again.
And that bared to be true in the Saturday night game, the Hockey Night in Canada game, when the Flames took on the Minnesota Wild. The Flames made two guys out and 2 guys in. Dubé and Rzeszka both came out of the lineup as healthy scratches. In their place, Richie and Richardson were in the lineup. I think that kind of goes to what you're talking about, a more traditional-looking fourth line with those guys in there.
Well, And honestly, like, when it comes time for the playoffs and such, because I think the team is treating the two Minnesota games as kind of like a mini playoff series, you know, you're going to probably see that kind of a deployment, whether it's Lucic on that line or, you know, the three that were out there, like some permutation of that as your fourth line. Just so
the fourth line last night was Lewis, Richardson, and Richie.
Yeah, and I think that you'll see them going out and crashing and banging and hitting anything that moves in the playoffs and trying to get energy any way possible.
And the Flames win this Minnesota game 7-3, and it sounds like a big win, but honestly, Matt, in the third, when it got to be 5-3, I was standing up in the press box going, these guys could let this win go. Like, Minnesota was just coming back into it so hard at that point that I thought, I'm constantly looking at the ice and glancing at the clock, being like, yeah, there's time for Minnesota to get back into this.
Yeah. I think that the Shillington play might have just shaken the team for a few minutes, and
let's talk about that in the third period. Oliver Shillington took a big hit into the boards. He was on the ice for probably 20-30 seconds. The first time in a long time I've seen a hit like that for the Flames, and had to be helped off the ice. After the game, Daryl Sutter said that he's fine, and Matthew Tkachuk said he seems to be fine when he saw him in the room. Do you think that, I mean, I don't know. I don't look at Daryl as the guy, as sort of the barometer for players that are fine or not. I think Daryl...
Well, honestly, him and, like, the Iraqi information minister have a lot in common in terms of, you know, yeah, he's fine. You know, he's alive.
Daryl kind of reminds me of my grandpa, that if, you know, all your limbs were there and you weren't bleeding, you were fine.
Yes, everything is fine.
So it would be interesting to see if Shillington plays the next game. And if you look at the Flames' salary cap, they don't have enough money to bring somebody up without sending somebody down, like Ruzicka. So I think if they aren't going to play Shillington, I think that Stone's going to have to draw in the lineup.
Which isn't the worst thing in the world, but it's certainly not ideal either. I think that, like,
both Mackey and Valimaki played today in Abbotsford, so it's not likely that they will be joining the Flames for a Tuesday game in Minnesota.
I think that, like, if you're going to see that kind of a transaction, it'll be tomorrow on Monday in the morning, and, you know, like, Ruzicka sent down and Mackey or Valimaki called up.
Even in that case, I don't know if that guy gets to Minnesota for the game. I could see him playing Stone for that one and then having that defenseman meet them back home for the Montreal game.
Yeah, it's possible.
I mean, if you want to do that, and I know they probably don't know yet, but those guys are in Vancouver. They're almost better, or in Abbotsford. They'd almost better fly that player to Calgary, meet them there, and then fly them to Minnesota from there.
It'll be interesting to see exactly how that all shakes out. I'm hopeful that Shillington might just need, you know, like, the day off, and, you know, like, he, like, hurt his shoulder more so than, you know, his head than, you know,
and it's not playoffs. I don't want them to rush him back. If he needs the time, especially for how important he's been to this team, if he needs the time, yeah, I'd rather they find a solution and keep him out of the lineup for a couple games.
Yeah, and, like, honestly, either Mackey or Valimaki could slot into that spot and play adequately for a game or two or three, you know.
Andy Walensky.
Then you're, you know, it's like, Oliver, get better soon.
I'm looking at who else we have access
Kincaid.
To. Nick DeSimone.
Or Kirkland, yeah.
Kevin Gravel. Those are the other possible veteran options.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's going to have to be Mackey or Valimaki. But I think, I don't know, I feel like Stone is good enough that for a game or two he can probably take that spot on. I mean, when was the last time Michael Stone played a bad game?
Yeah. When we bought him
and,
out.
Well, I think that was more just a salary thing.
Oh, I know. But, you know, like, that was, like, the last time that he was kind of waffling. He's been serviceable ever since.
And with this win over Minnesota, the Calgary Flames now have, they've ended their winning streak for games in a row, but they now have a franchise, they tie a franchise record for 11 home wins in a row, and they'll have a chance next month to extend that win streak quite a bit here. Matt, before we get on to this, one more question about this Minnesota game. Did you expect the Flames would win by that much of a margin?
Yes, I did.
Because against Minnesota?
How would you say? Because of the fact that Vancouver was so... it was not a 2-1 close game where the goalie stood on his head. Like, everybody screwed up that game. That, this team has the... For the first time in a long while, the ability to get really angry and direct that anger properly. And... and you saw that in that Minnesota game. They were just hitting every single thing.
Well, I was surprised how much animosity was there for teams that didn't play at all last year. Like, these teams have barely seen each other in the last couple of years. How much animosity there was.
Well, and I think that's why the Flames were treating like this two-game set against Minnesota as a playoff series, as a tune-up for it, because of the fact that, Minnesota could very well be a team that they face in the first round as one of the two wild card teams. And, you're needing to be able to assert your dominance over them. And, we saw that, the Flames were targeting Kaprizov the entire game, and he took a couple of penalties because of that. And, you're just having to throw everything at them. And
I was surprised by the physicality we saw from Mangiapane.
Yeah. Well, he was channeling another shorter former Flame in that game. Definitely saw a lot of Theo Fleury in his game in that one.
Spicy bread.
Yes.
Jalapeno bread is what we saw in that one.
Yep.
But that, I guess, of all the guys that we sort of saw push and shoving all game, Mangiapane was the most surprising to me.
Yeah, but that also bodes well, especially for the playoffs, that a guy like him, who is a little on the smaller side, is not going to get pushed around and is just as willing to punch people in the face like he did with Spurgeon, and wrestle with people, and okay, fine, you want to go that way, fine, let's go. And you and another... need to have that all for one attitude, and the ability to pick up guys like Backlund or Coleman if they're getting into rough stuff as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the fact that the Flames dressed who they dressed on the fourth line kind of told you they were expecting this kind of game.
Yeah. And this is, frankly, with all of the acquisitions this past offseason, with getting all of these very big, very physical guys, this is exactly the type of game that I've been waiting for. And, you're starting to see, and you'll probably see over the next couple of months as the games start getting more, because it naturally gets more up-tempo towards the end, that you're going to start to see, the dividends of having, five or six guys that are all, 6'3 and up that'll just hit like a freight train. One play... that Gudbranson did in the neutral zone where he edged off the one wild player who had the puck and crashed him right into the boards. The puck went to the other wild player, and then Zadorov absolutely creamed that guy too. And it's the last time that we really saw that level of physicality from the Flames was when Ferland and company were having fun against Vancouver in 14-15.
And on, sort of seeing the rewards of new players coming in, I think that, and Brad Treliving mentioned this when he made the deal, but bringing Tyler Toffoli in early gave him time to get adjusted and acclimatize the team. Toffoli got 2 goals and assists, 3 points in the night in this one. And I'm hoping that that's sort of Tyler now showing that, okay, he's comfortable here, he knows his role, and we'll start seeing more offense from him.
Well, and that's the good thing about having the amount of depth that we do, is that, him playing on the third line, he's facing lesser defensemen 5-on-5, and then he gets to go play with the first line on the power play. And, they did mention it during the broadcast of how they have Lindholm and Toffoli in two different spots on the right side of the goalie, setting up for one-timers, one high, one low, and they're both on the strong side to shoot for a one-timer, which gives guys like Gaudreau and Tkachuk, who also are set for one-timers on that side, options, you know, both ways to take slap shots. And, you know, like you saw with the Toffoli goal, like that kind of a thing working very well on that aspect. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see moving forward, like how much more dangerous that this power play becomes.
Well, with that game, the Flames now sit atop the Pacific Division still with 68 points. Second place is the Los Angeles Kings at 65 points, and Vegas is 62, and Edmonton 61. The only two teams ahead of us in the West, we're now third in the West, are St. Louis at 70, so just barely above us, and Colorado at 82 points. So a pretty good month for the Flames, and they have 64 points available to them in the remainder of the season. If they go 500 the rest of the way, they'd finish with 99 points in the season. I think Daryl's always said you kind of need 100 to get in, which they're going to do better than 500. So more than enough to get them to the dance. And as you and I have talked about during this win streak, it's about putting together a bit of a cushion, and they definitely have an impressive cushion now coming out of February.
Yeah, and frankly, this team needs to, and like you're starting to actually see a little bit of it, and getting that swagger of, yeah, we are the best damn team in this division, and we're going to be going far in the playoffs, and if you want to beat us, bring it, you know, and that kind of swagger that this team has. Like, that's, frankly, hasn't been around in a long, 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 long time, like 30 years long. You know, like, this team has, you know, like, it's good to see that, you know, like, they're basically looking at each opponent and saying, okay, yeah, you're doing that, great, we're gonna hit you now, and not care, and... Like, Minnesota's a very good team, and yet, like, they just completely ran roughshod over them.
Yeah, I think you're right. They're playing like... They're not playing like a middle team that's getting lucky and getting wins. They're starting to look like a team that is actually destined to go far.
Yeah. Basically, like, they're starting to have, like, the same type of swagger that teams like Chicago and Boston and Pittsburgh... who from like 10 years ago who are like perennially the best teams and like the teams to beat, they have that kind of energy around them right now, and you know, and the results speak for themselves. Like every game practically they're completely outshooting and outclassing the opposition, and you know, when you win 11 out of 12 games, you know, that's kind of indicates that you're doing a few things right.
One guy who's not doing some things right is Dylan Dubé. As you mentioned earlier, he's out of the lineup. He wasn't doing what the coach wanted. And this is, I think, an interesting story here. I think a lot of fans, I know you've been a Dubé fan for a while. I think a lot of fans are really high on him, maybe because of his draft position, maybe he's that homegrown talent. But he's out of the lineup. I think I agree with you that I think he'll stay out of the lineup for a while. But as a 23-year-old making $2.3 million with 3 years left, what do you think Dubé's future with the Flames is?
Well, and that's where it'll be interesting to see. Like,
I think we can agree he's having a disappointing year.
Yeah. And the thing is that like he is doing certain things better than he has been. Like he has been better defensively this year. And he's more consistently doing the little things right. It's just that offensively he's been bad for most of the year. Part of that's due to having Brett Ritchie on his line for a good portion of the season. But, you know, it's one of those things that he need. I think that, frankly, like how the Flames sat Oliver Shillington last year and basically made him watch the whole season. You know, I think that having Dubé up in the press box and say, watch what these people are doing and learn. And, you know, because sometimes you need to remove yourself from the actual on ice and be able to visualize the game better. And I think that just having him take some time off to regroup, I think, and then, you know, like when they do deploy him, I think he'll be hungry to impress. So, you know, it'll be just interesting to see. But I think that, like, there at this point, there's no
2.3 million is a lot more than Shillington's making, though. I mean, that's an expensive contract to park.
Oh, I know. And that's one of those things that, like, I'm expecting him to be a lot better next season, regardless. But, you know, like, frankly, like, this season, he's been worth about 1.6, 1.7 for what he's brought. It's just that, you know, like, as you said, 2.3 is a lot. And then, you know, he needs to figure out a way to be more in every way. And, you know, like, there have been too many games where pucks have bounced on him. Or, you know, just little mistakes that cause problems that screw up offensive chances, and it's just...
I think Dubé's an NHL player, but I wonder what his future with the Flames are. I mean, if I look at this lineup, our top six is Johnny Gaudreau, Elias Lindholm, Matthew Tkachuk, Blake Coleman, Mikael Backlund, Andrew Mangiapane. I don't see him usurping any of those guys.
No.
If we look at the bottom six, we have Monahan, Toffoli on a line, which is where Dubé's been playing a lot. Then we've got Lucic, Lewis, Richardson, Richie to make up that last line. When I look at that line with Monahan and Toffoli, which they're putting a lot of money into, and assuming those guys stay next year, I think you could do better for the same money. I mean, I look at a guy like Nikushkin or Nemesnikov or, you know, Zach Sanford, all these guys.
Yarncroc, you know, like,
well, yeah, I mean, yeah, Yarncroc. I mean, I'm just looking at guys that are UFAs.
Yeah, well, he is too, that's why.
Yeah, he is. You know, guys, you know, even like a Josh Archibald. You know, like, I think you could fill that, a Derek Stepan. Like, I feel like you could fill that role similarly with a more veteran guy who might be able to do the same thing. So it makes me wonder, like, is Dylan Dubé's time as a Flame coming to an end? Is he more valuable as a trade piece?
Well, and that's the thing. Like, if the Flames can go out and acquire somebody at the deadline in order to make the dollars work, a guy like Dubé might need to be included. And
would you even be willing to move Dubé for a pick to recoup some picks?
Possibly. Again, it would largely depend on the who's and the what's. Like, if you're getting, like, I'm just going to, because of repetition, say get Cal Yarncroc in the deal, right? If you're doing that, then, you know, just role-wise, you know, Dubé's spot's kind of gone at that point permanently. So then, you know, going out and getting, say, a third for Dubé from, you know, some rebuilding team, that's not bad value.
And I think as a team that's going to need every dollar they can get for, you know, money this summer, I don't know if I would move Dubé for a pick at the deadline. I think that, you know, he's a guy that's valuable enough as an extra body come playoff time, but I could see that being a draft day deal.
Well, and that's where, like, if, like, say you're wanting to get, like, a $4 or $5 million contract at the deadline, and, like, another guy of Toffoli's caliber, say, and you just need the dollars to work, like, the other team will eat some of the contract, you might have to throw in a guy like Dubé, even if you're getting an asset back, like a fourth or a fifth, in the deal for whomever that would be. And, you know, that might be a situation where, you know, utilizing the dollars and the asset for something that's a clear upgrade. Because, like, if you could get, like, a similar-ish guy to Toffoli on that line, then, like, yeah, you're good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not expecting they're going to get another Toffoli-like player, at least not at the deadline. And I think you and I talked about it a little bit. We'll talk more about the deadline come March. But I think if I'm looking at the guy I want to put on that line with Monahan, Toffoli, I want someone with a little more veteran presence. I don't, you know, I don't think they need to be Toffoli level, but, you know, somebody who's a little bit more of a veteran on that line. And, you know, I mean, at that point, if Dubé does fall to the third line, I mean, with, you know what, Lucic at 6 and Dubé at 2.3, that's $8.3 million. So let's call it 9 by the time you add somebody else in there. That's an expensive fourth line.
Yeah.
So I think I would not be surprised to see Dubé and Valimaki even move together in an off-season deal.
Yeah, and that could very well be.
But when Daryl Sutter came in, one of the guys when I looked around the roster that I thought is not going to do well under Daryl Sutter is Dylan Dubé. Like he's not a Sutter style player, and I thought maybe we'd get that out of him. And I think you said earlier he's looking better in some areas, but I just don't think he's a Daryl Sutter player. And we see this in every team, right? They bring in a new coach, and one or two guys just don't gel, and we get rid of them. Or that team gets rid of them. So I think this might be a case where Dubé is a serviceable NHLer. He's just not a Daryl Sutter NHLer.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where it will largely depend. You know, like it's like you look at, say, like a team like a San Jose who's in the midst of a rebuild-ish. You know, like they might want to shed Hurdle's contract or something like that. And, yeah, like, it's frustrating that, like, Dubé has struggled, but, like, frankly, like, with where the Flames are at in terms of their overall placing, they're very much more in a put-up-or-shut-up type zone, and, you know, like, if a guy like Dubé is, you know, like, even though he's a young player, if he's not contributing in a top nine fashion, it's like, well, we just don't have space for you to figure things out. And we saw that a lot with teams like Chicago and Boston, where they would have to deal out decent players that were just, you know, or like Tampa, like with Nemestikov, as you mentioned earlier, like they had to get rid of him just because they couldn't afford to keep him as well. And
like, I'm just looking, if we're looking for sort of the, you know, the cheap third, fourth line guy, because again, I think this team's going to be looking for every dollar they can get. I could even see, you know, you're mentioning Hurdle. Like, I could even see a team in the draft saying, okay, by this point, we know we're not bringing somebody else back, so we want some assurance. We'll take on the $2.3 million. And I think Calgary would very easily shed some, you know, be happy to shed $2.3 million off their books.
Yeah.
He's a good player. But I don't know what his future is in Calgary, and I think that I guess we'll see what happens with him in the coming few weeks here, but I think that this move could signal, I don't want to say the end, I don't want to say he'll never play for the Flames again, but I think this is sort of Daryl Sutter showing his hand.
Yeah. Well, and especially, like, as I was mentioning earlier, like, this team is kind of gearing up for the playoffs, and certain players have certain roles, and you know, like, if you just look at Dubé himself, like, he is not better as a fourth liner than the guys that were put in the lineup ahead of him the other day.
No, I totally agree with you, and I think that he has he's a bona fide NHLer, and I think that's the reason you might see him last through the trade deadline, because he's a reliable body if somebody goes down between, you know, the 21st and the Stanley Cup Finals, however long the Flames last. But I don't know that I'm less convinced now than I was before that Dylan Dubé is going to have a long, that he will see this contract through as a Flame. Yeah. What about Adam Rzeczka? Also scratched there. He's still waiver eligible. Do you think that we'll see Rzeczka stay up here with the team, or do you think that they will, or do you think Daryl Sutter will say, okay, we know what we got, send him back?
Could be. Especially, like, if they need to recall a defenseman, I think that they will send him down. Rzeczka's been good. No real complaints. He's a little on the passive side. for a fourth line role. But you know, I think he brings more to the lineup at this point than Dubé does. But yeah, I think it's just a numbers game, and like I think that Daryl especially trusts the veteran guys more than the first year pros, like Ružička, who, you know, like, would I expect Ružička to be a full time player next year? Definitely. Same with Peltier, but I think that, you know, like, him finishing off the season strong in Stockton might be better for both him and the team, frankly.
Yeah, and just because the Flames are so close to the salary cap, you know, the top end of the cap, I could see them sending him down for a little bit. I mean, if they are going to get Yarncroke or anybody, any other player, they need to shed some salary. So I could see them sending him down even just to, you know, make that work. And like you said, then penciling him in for next year. But I don't think that this is necessarily a knock on Ružička. I think this is sort of, you know what, you're still the call-up. You know, we're going to take you out for a game or two. And I think as a rookie, that's to be expected when you're playing on the bottom six.
Yeah.
Let's move ahead then from sort of the week that was to what's coming up. And let's take a look at the March schedule. The Flames are back to their regular scheduled games coming up in March. And these are, again, the games that we are anticipating them playing in March, a much busier schedule than February. And the Flames are essentially playing almost every other day, but still a lot of home games. Home is where the wins are for the Flames, as we're seeing, and only four games on the road in March, all of which are only one-day trips. Like, you know, they play Minnesota and they're back. They play Colorado and then they're back in Calgary. They play Colorado again and they're back in Calgary. And they play Vancouver and they're back in Calgary. But as much as they're all one-game away trips or road trips, two of them run back-to-back. So we're going to be here and then go to Colorado, then here and go to Vancouver. So still a little bit of, I guess, pressure travel in those road swings. Matt, you had an interesting idea earlier before we started recording of how you'd break this month down.
Well, this month's schedule, it clearly breaks into two halves. Like, the first half of the month, between now and March 13th, the Flames are playing eight games, and seven of which are against very good playoff teams. Minnesota, Colorado twice, Edmonton, Washington, Tampa, and even though they're not in the playoffs, they're close in the East with Detroit. The lone lesser opponent is Montreal, and, you know, like, there's just not really a lot of room for this team to, you know, they're playing good team after good team after good team.
And, you know, not only that, but when I look at this schedule, the first half of the month to me is very Eastern weighted. Like, we've got Montreal, Washington, Tampa Bay, Detroit. The second half of the and even let's go New Jersey right to the 16th. The second half of the month is very Western weighted. We've got Vancouver, San Jose, Arizona, Edmonton, Colorado, LA. So I think if this team is going to give up points in this month, I think you've got to do it in the first half because, I mean, you don't want to give up points divisionally or if you can avoid it in the conference. But even the second half, I think San Jose, Edmonton, Colorado, and LA, I mean, those are four opponents that, you know, we don't want to be giving points up to.
No, and to me, like, the three single biggest and most important games this month are on the 5th, the 13th, and the 29th.
The three Colorado games?
Yeah. And, like, if Calgary fulfills their destiny as, like, the team that's going to come out of the Pacific Division and go to the Western Conference Finals, more than likely, they're going to be playing the Colorado Avalanche.
At some point.
You know, as, like, the Central Division champion. So, you know, like, would it be awesome if the Flames played Nashville, St. Louis, or Minnesota instead? Of course. But, you know, just based off of everything that we've seen from Colorado this season, they're going to be going to the Western Conference Finals. So those three games in particular, to me, are like the ones to set the tone and, you know, hopefully win two or or maybe all three of them just to, you know, set the tone so when and if the Flames get to face the Avalanche again, you know, they're more ready than last time.
Do you think, I think that is, and I've talked to a couple Avalanche fans who really don't think at all about the Flames, but I think we tend to think more about the Avalanche because of the, you know, the royal defeat that we had there. I feel like you said, that sort of, it would do us justice to beat them in the playoffs, but I think that as Flames fans, those are probably more important to us than they are to them.
Oh, for sure, because they, like, completely pants the Flames last time. So, yeah, of course they don't care about Calgary, because, you know, they were the ones that completely embarrassed us. So, yeah, of course.
And I think when we look at those two games, or those three games, and we put them in with the, the playoff teams that we're playing this month, Edmonton, L.A., Tampa Bay, I think the Flames, this is going to be the month so far they can really show if they're a playoff competitor. I would like to see them win those Colorado games. I don't know if they'll win all three, but I think they at least need to be competitive. And I think that's going to be the, to me, the story of the month in March, is these guys need to show that they can play playoff hockey. In playoffs, you don't win every game, right? It's best of seven. And I think that, you know, even if we are competitive against Colorado and don't beat them, I think to me that's going to be the most important thing. If we're competitive against Tampa Bay, if we're competitive against Edmonton, if we're competitive against, you know, LA, if we're competitive against Minnesota, I think this team just needs to really show that they can hang with the big boys at this point.
Yeah, and with the eight games segment coming up between now and the 13th, frankly, the Flames at worst need to go 4-4 through that stretch.
So let's talk about those teams. That's at Minnesota versus Montreal, at Colorado versus Edmonton versus Washington versus Tampa versus Detroit versus Colorado.
Yeah. There are six games against playoff teams, two against non-playoff teams.
And the fact that they're at home, I mean, this team's been doing so well at home, and the fact that the Dome will be full again on the 3rd, I think that's really going to help the momentum for the Flames as well.
Yeah, and this, you know, especially with that for the Minnesota game that just happened, this team needs to kind of fulfill their goal of being the team to beat, and and just completely outclassing other teams. They need to not really oh, you're Washington, oh, you're Tampa, that's great, good for you, and we're just going to play our game and you have to deal with us, and be that level of assertive, which at times has been a little lacking, but less so this season.
I don't know why I would say that is they can't get intimidated by the top teams.
No. And they have to just, because frankly, this team is built to win a Stanley Cup. And in order to do that, you have to actually beat the other teams that are also going for the Stanley Cup, like the Colorados, like the Tampas, like the Floridas. And, it'll be tough, of course, but, that's the whole point of the season, is to test yourself and push yourself, so that way even if they drop the games to Colorado, take those lessons and learn from it to make those adjustments, so that way if you do meet them in the postseason, you stand a better shot.
And you can take those lessons into the next games that month or the next teams. This is, I think, the most trying month for this team. If we won't look ahead to April now, but April's a much easier schedule.
Well, yeah, 6 of the 15 games in April are against teams that are currently in the postseason. So it's a very easy month compared to this one.
And this one's got a lot of home hockey. And my worry on this one is with such short road swings, one-game road swings, that the team is going to get tired on the road. I think sometimes when you're on the road for, a week, you sort of learn to endure it and your body gets into a habit. But when you're just going on a quick road trip and home and you're playing so much at home, I worry that the Flames might struggle with these four road games.
Well, and that's the thing about April as well, is that they're basically playing on the road for a good portion of the month. So while they're playing a lot at home right now, like, that will get corrected, I think, heading into April, because, like, they have the California plus Seattle trip, plus a two-game trip, and then another three-game trip to end the season. So, you know, like, yes, it's a concern, but less so just due to how things shake out next month.
And because the Flames have some tricky games this month with, you know, Tampa Bay, with Colorado, I think, and this is probably going to sound like hockey 101, but you have to win the games that you have to win. Like Montreal, Buffalo, you have to win those games. You've got to you got to get those 2 points and build up that buffer. Because I think, I'll be honest, man, I think the Flames are going to struggle in March. I don't think it's going to be a storybook month like February's been. And I think that they're going to face adversity. And we might even see a 2 or 3 game losing streak here. So I think, you know, these guys really need to pad their you know, their record where they can here.
Yeah, well, when you're playing 16 games in 31 days, you know, like, you're going to be tired. And, you know, like, yes, at times we're playing bad teams like Buffalo. But, you know, like, there's some back-to-backs. There's four separate ones. And, you know, like, as you said, the games against the bad teams, they need to find a way to squirrel those points away. And, you know, because it's going to be tough. Like, you know, frankly, like, if you take the Minnesota, Washington, Tampa, and 3 Colorado games, like, you know, those are 6 games against elite teams. You know, Calgary, like, if they go 3-3 out of those 6 games, like, that would be a minor miracle just because of, like, how much we're playing and, you know, the caliber of opponents.
When I look at this month, I see Montreal, Buffalo, Arizona, maybe San Jose, that are not great teams, and I think
Vancouver
that there's
too. Yeah, New Jersey.
Yeah, I wouldn't put them in there for the sake of what I'm about to argue, but sure. I think those teams that I was just that I just mentioned, the Montreal, Arizona, you know, Buffalo, maybe San Jose, and those are all prime starts for Dan Vladar. And I think that we haven't seen Dan Vladar play a lot since, you know, the calendar turned to 2022. I think that there's, I mean, with, you know, so many back-to-backs and so many games that we should be winning, I think we're going to see a lot more Dan Vladar in March.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I'm, like, honestly, I'm expecting the Montreal, the Washington, the Buffalo game, the Arizona game.
Montreal makes sense. Washington's a second of a back-to-back, so that makes sense. Buffalo's the first of a back-to-back, but that makes sense.
Even the second Colorado game I could see Vladar getting.
You know, I wouldn't be opposed to that because I think switching looks on them would be good. I think when you're playing them 3 times in a month, they're going to scout your goalies, so swap goalies.
Yeah. Well, and plus the night before they played Detroit, so it's better to get bank the 2 points for sure and then, you know, throw Vladar to the Wolves and say, have fun.
Yeah, and I think I could see Sutter playing playing Markstrom for both of those games, Detroit and Colorado, and then maybe giving Vladar, you know, one. I could, if the Flames are doing really well, I could actually see Vladar playing Buffalo and Vancouver, both back-to-backs.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see exactly how they manage the ice time, because, like, there's absolutely no way that Markstrom's going to be playing like 14 or 15 of the 16 games.
Well, knowing that we're playoff bound at this point, like, I think we can all agree we may not be number one, but the Flames are going to the postseason. Like, there's going to have to be an epic fail at this point for them to not go to the postseason. Mm. I think that we have to start looking ahead to managing Markstrom's time, and you play him a lot when you're trying to get in there.
Yeah, but then
now that we're in, you've got to ease up a little bit.
Yeah, and, like, that's where, like the back-to-back with Detroit and Colorado, it's like you put Markstrom in against the team that you're likely going to get the 2 points, which is Detroit, and you're kind of throwing the Avalanche game without throwing the Avalanche game, and, you know, see how it goes, basically.
How's New Jersey doing this year? I don't even know where they are in the standings.
They're mediocre. I know they're not in the playoff spot. And all
so that could be a way. That could be a something you do, too, is you put Markstrom in Detroit and Colorado and then give Markstrom the week off, essentially put Vladar in New Jersey and Buffalo. But We'll see. We're not the goalie coach. We're not making those decisions.
Yeah.
But I feel like this month you've got to get Dan Vladar going again if you're going to, you know, give Markstrom some time. And you can't keep using Markstrom at the rate we are.
No, like there are 31 games remaining between now and the end of April. Like, frankly,
I think Mark, he can play 20 of those max.
Yeah, I was going to say 22 would be like my upper limit. And, you know, like, it, and that's a heavy workload for, you know, like 11 games in a month is a lot for any goaltender.
And I think the April schedule, we won't get into it now, but I think the April schedule is a lot easier to play more Vladar. You got two Seattle games, you got Arizona, you know, Chicago, Winnipeg, Dallas, like teams that you might be able to play those guys against, or you might be able to play Vladar against. But I think March, it's going to be interesting because they're still trying to bank those points. But yeah, I mean, you've got to rest Markey at some point, especially with them essentially playing every other day.
Yeah, it'll be a tough thing to manage, but you know, Daryl's done a decent enough job thus far. It's just, we just have to wait and see. Like, it'll be tough because, like, especially for the next 2 weeks, like, you're playing top teams every night, basically. So, you know, we'll see.
Well, Matt, let's look a little bit further ahead than March, and let's talk about the NHL awards. And obviously, these are generally, I don't know if they've announced a date this year, but they're always in June. They've been Vegas the last couple of years. I think that with the Flames looking as good as they are, it's likely that we might see a number of Flames taking home hardware this year. I'm going to throw out some ideas I have for this, and you tell me if you think you agree with these or someone else that might take home hardware.
Yeah.
When I look at the definitions of the awards, I don't think you can give the Jack Adams Trophy, which is let me just read it here, awarded to the NHL coach adjudged to have contributed the most to his team's success. I don't think there's anybody in the league but Daryl Sutter you can give that to.
The only one that would be close would be Rod Brind'Amour and win Carolina. And this is Daryl's award.
Brind'Amour won it last year with Carolina. I don't think that their roster's changed enough that you could say that he's the reason for that success.
True.
But like, I think when I look at the Flames roster, it's pretty much the same team as last year, at least the big core. Yeah. And in fact, you could even say on paper it's worse having lost Giordano, and yet they've made significant changes under their coach. Like, I think when we look at the coach who's most – there's certain teams you and I could coach Tampa Bay and they'd still be good. But I think when we look at the coach who we can directly tie to the team's success, Daryl Sutter's the only guy.
Yeah, I agree.
Especially if the Flames make it past the first round, because, I mean, nobody's got us past the first round in a while. So I think that's really what'll seal his deal is, you know, can he get us past the first round?
Well, and that award is named, like, the voting is, like, after the regular season and but before the playoffs. So whatever happens in the postseason is just, you know, purely on Daryl.
And Daryl would be the second Sutter to win that. He's never actually won it before, but his brother Brian has. Brian was the winner in 1990-91 with St. Louis. So it'd be nice for Daryl Sutter, a storied coach. I'm surprised he's never won it before.
Yeah. And frankly, like, Sutter's a Hall of Fame coach. So, you know, it would make sense. It's sort of like Brodeur not winning, like, a Vezina until he was, I think, like 34 or 35. It's like, how?
Well, let's go there with the Vezina. I think, again, our starting goaltender, Jacob Markstrom, is making a strong case for the Vezina Award, which is awarded to the league's top goaltender.
Yeah, I think that the difference and, like, the reason why he's a shoo-in versus other guys who have slightly better stats is that 8 shutouts.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, like, when you're doubling up second in the league in shutouts, when, like, that's, like, the key goalie stat, for, you know, like, for, like, exceptional goaltending, Markstrom, I think, is the runaway favorite for the.
And looking ahead at the schedule, I don't think he's going to stop at 8. Like, I can see him getting to double digits.
Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up pushing for that record of 15 for the team.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, we're already at 10. So, like, you know, 5 between now and the end, I wouldn't be shocked.
And I think when I look at other goalies, too, like, here in Calgary, we like our players, and we think we have a good defensive core. But if you look around the league, we have a very inexperienced defensive core, a lot of young guys. And I think that there's something to be said, too, of Jacob doing this without, you know, a lot of, let's call them, established veterans in front of him.
Yes, but...
I'm not saying that they're not as good, but I think when it comes to voting, a lot of people look at names.
True. And, you know, for how, you know, and I'm just going to go there for a minute. How this defensive grouping, after losing Giordano, has played this season has been absolutely nothing short of remarkable. And all six of those defensemen deserve a huge amount of kudos for how amazing they've been this season. Like, even guys that, like, when we got them were kind of poo-pooed by a majority of Flames fans, with Nikita Zadorov and Eric Branson. Like, those guys have become quite the, you know, frankly, with how they've played, like, they're outperforming some teams' first-line defensemen, or first-pairing defensemen. So, yep. You know, for as much as Markstrom's been good this season, the defense, you know, they deserve a lot of credit as well. All six of them have been nothing short of spectacular.
I agree, but that's kind of what I mean. Like, we've kind of got this ragtag group of defensemen, and when you look at what Jacob's doing behind that group, it's very impressive. The last Flames goalie, of course, to win this was Mika Kiprusoff in 05-06, won the Vezina Trophy. And one last trophy I'm going to throw out there is the Hart Memorial Trophy. The Hart Memorial Trophy is awarded to the player judged most valuable by his team. And I can see this definitely going to Johnny Gaudreau. Again, I think if we sort of look at, you know, teams out there, I can't think of another team right now who has been taken on the back of one player as much as the Flames have been taken on the back of Gaudreau this year.
Yeah. Again, another runaway favorite for the award.
The Flames have never had a Hart Memorial Trophy winner.
No, and I think that this is the year that that'll change. And I'm going to add one, you know, because I'm reading your notes here. I'm going to add one more name to your list.
Sure.
And that will be the Selke Trophy, and I think there is another shoe-in for Elias Lindholm.
So the Selke Trophy is awarded to the forward who best excels in the defensive aspects of the game.
Yeah. Because the Flames' first line has been by far the best line in hockey, and he has been the linchpin defensively on that line. Not saying that Tkachuk and Gaudreau haven't been carrying the water, they certainly have, but Lindholm has been spectacular defensively, allowing the other two guys room to create more havoc.
The Selke Trophy is voted on by a poll by the Professional Hockey Writers Association, so I can definitely see that. I think there's a lot of people who didn't know who Lindholm was, you know, playing over here in Calgary. And this year, I think he's definitely getting some notice. So I could definitely see him getting that one.
Yeah. And usually that award goes to, like, who is the best defensive high-scoring forward? And, you know, and, like, Lindholm hitting that 8-goals-in-8-games streak, I think, helped to elevate his standing in the NHL, because it's like, oh wow, you're doing that. And, you know, the player of the week award, and, you know, then you dig into the numbers and it's like, holy, you know, like, that line has just been spectacular, well beyond everybody else. So, you know, like, I think that they've only been on the ice for 13 5-on-5 goals this year and, like, scored over 50. Like, it's just ridiculously high the difference there. And I think they're all in the top 10 for plus minus. And yeah, it's just been in one spectacular line, and I think that, you know, a lot of awards are going to be coming Calgary's way.
Yeah, and obviously if the Flames go as far as I think a lot of people in there destined for, I think it's very likely that we get a Conn Smythe winner as well. I'm not even going to predict that now, but I think that could definitely be coming the Flames way.
You already know who that's going to be. Lucic.
Last one was Al MacInnis, 89 for the Flames.
Yeah.
Player name most valuable to his team in the playoffs. I could definitely see that being Gaudreau. I could see that being any of that first line, actually.
Yeah.
But
could
yeah,
be the goalie, could be Anderson. Yeah,
it could be. I don't know if Anderson would be seen as usually that award's going to the high scoring forward, I found.
Yeah, I know.
In the last handful of years.
Yeah.
I think media wise, that's kind of what the league wants to show off. But I could see it being the goalie for sure. I could see it being any of our top forwards. So I think this could be the year that we see the Flames really do well at the award ceremony. I don't think, I can't think of a, I have to look at the numbers, but I don't think we're in line for Lady Bing. Which I,
well, especially after Gaudreau told off the ref the other day. I think that, you know, the gentlemanliness thing kind of went away there.
I've always hated the name. At least just call it the Bing Memorial Trophy. Like, the Lady Bing is not a trophy I want to win.
Well, to be fair, like, that was an actual person, and, you know, she donated the award.
Yeah.
So, you know, it does sound hokey if you're not familiar with hockey history and, like, you know, it, you know, it, with being lady in it, like, it's a little odd, but, you know, different eras. And
the Flames don't have anybody in line for Calder Memorial, which, for Rookie of the Year, I mean, the only guy that would really qualify is Rujicka, and he's not Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
Art Ross is for the player who leads the league in total points. I don't think that's going to be us.
Yeah.
James.
By the way, Moritz Seider for Detroit is looking like he'll be the Calder Trophy guy, and he's going to be one heck of a defenseman in this league. Just wanted to throw that out there because, you know.
The James Norris Memorial Trophy is for the defenseman who demonstrates through the season the greatest all-round ability. I could see some of our defensive core getting this in a couple of years, but I'm not sure this is the year for Norris from this team. I could see Anderson winning that in 2-3 years, but I don't think this is the year. I never know about the Masterton Trophy. That's for the player who best exemplifies the qualities of preservation, sportsmanship, and dedication. Like, a lot of that stuff we don't see, you know, outside the rink. Same thing with the Lindsay Trophy. So, I mean, there's other trophies this team could take home as well. The NHL Foundation Award. But, you know, the other one that are... Yeah, those are really the only ones there. Maybe the Messier Award we might take home, but again, those really aren't there. Here's the question for you. If the Flames make it, let's say, past the second or third round, do you think the Tree would win the Jim Gregory General Manager of the Year Award?
I think that one's a shoo-in for him regardless.
Like, I think that, yeah, I don't know if I'd say regardless. I think if they can make it past the first round, it is, because he's built some first round teams. If he can't make it past first,
well, this year's nothing spectacular. Voted before the season or the playoffs start. So, and like, you look at how the team was last year, the Flames made a rather large amount of adjustments, and each one of them fit the identity of the current team perfectly. They went out and got Toffoli, who's blended in this team amazing. You know, like,
the only reason I could see them not, and that one I'm just checking the website here, it's voted on by a 41-member panel that includes all 31 GMs, 5 NHL executives, and 5 media members. The only reason I could see them not giving that to Trees, say, let's see what he does to get himself out of his cap mess.
Yeah.
Like, I think you're right.
Well,
he's probably
to be fair, like, basically 32 general managers have a cap mess. So
that's true. Yeah, I could. That's one we've never obviously had somebody win that one. So that's one I could definitely see the Flames taking home as well.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, I think that wraps up this week. Why don't we look ahead to next week, shall we?
Definitely. And, you know, it's good to be able to talk about this team. It feels like they're finally coming into their own as a team and, like, taking that next step, which, you know, we've flirted with over the years at times, but then, like, it quickly dissipated. You know, this is, like, the first time that, like, they've been looking good and then continually looking good.
And so, I was actually going back and looking at some of our shows, you know, the last week of February, first week of March in the past. And at this point, at least the last 3 or 4 seasons, not including last season was kind of weird. This team's always been notoriously bad after that week-long, whatever we want to call it, all-star break or bye week, and we're kind of talking about how we need to be putting together 6 or 7 wins to at least get into a playoff spot.
Yeah, and, like, this team's level of focus and, frankly, anger has been something else. You know, like, you're seeing Eat Bread raging on the Wild, for example. Like, that was, you know, something different. I never expected to see that from him as a player. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see just how this team, you know, if they go into a lull again or, you know.
The best meme graphic I saw online about that Mangiapane attitude. When you were a kid, did you watch the He-Man cartoons?
Yeah.
Do you remember when he'd pull the sword out and say, "By the power of Grayskull"?
Yeah.
I saw somebody put Mangiapane's face on him and it said, "By the power of Sutter, I have the power."
Yeah, pretty much. Like, yeah, like it's like, who are you and what have you done with the usual, you know, mild-mannered, nice guy Mangiapane?
It's almost like Superman. By day, mild-mannered reporter.
Yeah.
But anyway, looking ahead to the next week. Last week, neither of us were right in our predictions. I predicted two wins, but I had the wrong two wins. I thought we'd win in Winnipeg and Vancouver games, lose the Minnesota game. You thought we'd win all three, so neither of us got that one right, but we have three more games to predict this week. We're on the road again, which is something the Flames haven't said in a long time, since the beginning of February. Tuesday night, the Flames are in Minnesota, a 6 p.m. Calgary start time, so note that one. That's earlier than we're used to. Then on Thursday, they're back here in the Saddle Dome for a 7 p.m. start time against the Montreal Canadiens. That'll be the first time the building's been full in a while since before Christmas. So it's always a full building when Montreal's here, but expect a noisy building for that one. And then Saturday, they're on the road against the Colorado Avalanche, an 8 p.m. start time. So two road games, one home game. What are you thinking, Matt?
6 points.
You're going three wins. Going all three again.
Yep.
The win streak shall restart.
Well, how would you say? This team needs to show that they can, and, you know, assert themselves against, you know, like Montreal, I think, is a given for both of us, regardless.
Do you think Toffoli lights up Montreal? Like, I'd love to see that.
I'm honestly expecting a hat trick.
I'd love to see, like, a hat trick, an assist on whoever else gets a goal. You know, he's got to be all over,
like,
that
everybody's
team.
Just going to be feeding. Here, Toffoli, score as many as you want. Please, here, take the puck.
Is Pitlick playing in that? Is he, like, I don't even know what his status is.
Who knows? I'm assuming that one, regardless, is a win. But I think that because of how the Flames treated the first Minnesota game as a playoff game, I think you're going to see that same level of intensity from the team. And, you know, and if they're playing that level of intensity against Colorado too, I think they're going to catch Colorado flat-footed a bit, because, you know, like, frankly, Colorado's not used to a heavy team coming and hitting them. And I'm expecting full on that, like, everybody's going to be rock 'em sock 'em in that one. So,
and I think especially if you can if you can pull out a big win against Montreal, I'd say 8-1, 7-2, something like that, I think that's a lot of momentum to ride into Denver.
Yeah.
And that's a Saturday night game. They've got a day on either side to recover, so I think that they'll definitely have some time to get ready for that one.
Yeah, like, I'm fully expecting that one to be a physical, nasty, nasty affair.
You know, I think that when I look at the whole schedule for the month, that could be the game to watch. Like, I think by the time we get to the second and third game against Colorado, we could see a banged up Flames team. I think that could be the game of the month.
Yeah, I agree. That's the one I've already been penciled in of must watch.
I'm going to go a little bit different than you. I'm just looking at the schedule here. I'm going to say they win Minnesota and they win Montreal, and I think they're going to lose the first Colorado game.
Yeah. And that is, you know, I was kind of coin tossing it, but, you know.
You're our eternal optimist, Matt.
Well, I believe in Daryl. Daryl does not do anything wrong.
When I look back at the season, you know, previews, you've thought we're going to win the Cup since we started this 10 years ago, so.
Yeah, well, no, when we actually sucked, you know, I was realistic.
Then you only thought we'd be Western Conference champions.
No, for the first few years, I was, you know, it wasn't really until this team had the talent level that they do that, you know, and have had for the last like 4 or 5 years, that it's been like, well, you know, based off the talent, they should be doing something, and then they fall flat on their face every time. But, you know, Daryl's not allowing them to do that, so.
Do you think we see Dan Vladar in net for any of these three games?
Probably Montreal.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I think a lot of times the coaching staff pencils these games in for the backup, you know, at the beginning of the year, and we all kind of knew Montreal would be lousy, so I can see them having penciled that one in.
Yeah. It's one of those where, like, you could put Arseny Sergeyev or Daniel Chechelev in there, and I think that the Flames would still win.
Maybe that's the time you get your Dustin Wolf call-up.
Yeah.
No, I'm teasing on that one, but I think, as we said earlier, you got to get Vladar going again. And I think putting him in for a big win like that, I mean, Dan hasn't been in for one of the Flames' big wins yet this season. I think that could really help his confidence as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's about all we have to talk about this week. But as always, we'd love to hear what everyone else has to say, whether you want to dispute with us about something we've talked about, whether you want to agree with us, whether you have different thoughts on how this week's going to go, or... maybe you think that the Flames are in line for hardware that we don't. Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. You can, of course, get a hold of us on Twitter. We're at Fireside Podcast. On Facebook, we're Fireside Chat. So Facebook.com/Fireside Chat. We're on YouTube. We're on Instagram. You can find us. The easiest way to find us on those is go to our website, firesidechat.ca, and all the links are at the very top. And then... while you're at the website, leave a comment on the show, or you can send us either an email or an audio message if you want to, and give us your thoughts. And if you do want to give us an audio message, you can also phone us. We have a phone number. I haven't promoted it much this year, but our phone number is 403-768-2121. Again, that number is 403-768-2121. It's different than last year. We had some issues with our provider, so we had to change numbers. But if you want to call us, don't worry, Matt and I won't pick up. But you can leave us a voicemail, and we'd love to play your voicemail on the show and share your thoughts.
Oh, and by the way, just loop back. You remember back that rant episode that I had when Glenn Gullitson was coach? And it was basically a 2-hour episode of me ranting, saying we need to hire Daryl Sutter.
I pretty much could have gone and got pizza and just left you here.
Yeah. Well, this is why, you know. Like, even then, I always have believed in Daryl Sutter. And he is making the most out of this team. So, you know.
In Daryl, you trust.
Yep. Did then, do now. Let's go.
Well, let's trust him through this week to get us 6 points. In Daryl, we trust.
Yep. As always, go Flames, go.
Fireside Chat is hosted by Dan Stevenson, co-hosted by Matt DeBorg. This episode produced and edited by Peter Marino. Fireside Chat is licensed under Creative Commons license. For full license details, visit firesidechat.ca.